welcome to our call this evening. This is our A-Book call for the month of February. Tonight, this call is brought to us tonight. Smile Reminder, who has sent out all announcements for the meeting, Bonadent Dental Laboratory, Rocket Dog Dental, Care Credit, and Blatchford Seminars. And what I have tonight is I have Dennis and Marie Stiles, who I'd like to introduce in a moment. But before I do that, I would like to share with you a couple of things that we have available coming up. Now, before I do that, I'm going to see if I can get this to record this call right here. So now we're recording. I want to show you some things that we have coming up in the near future, some speaking events. We're going to be in Park City, Utah, February 25th to March 4th. It says the 3rd, but we're actually living on the 4th. It's a great week of skiing and a very little seminar. But if you're a skier, lots of skiing. We do it every year, so same about the same time. So if you can't come this year, put on your schedule for next year. Also, a fun thing that we have coming up in the fall, September 2nd through the 5th, we are going to do a climb here in Sun River, Oregon. We're going to climb one of the Sisters. It's a mountain that goes from about 6,000 up to 10,000. We do this for Climb for a Cause. Climb for a Cause raises money to support two children's dental clinics, one in Guatemala and one in Nepal. Danny Bobrode, American Dental Company, is the person who started this, and he's quite a mountain climber. But these are not, as a matter of fact, in 2 weeks he's going to Morocco to take part in a what I would call an ultra marathon. It's 10 days straight, 26 miles a day, crossing the Sahara Desert. He's actually a very intelligent person. Why he's doing this, I don't really know. I mean, he's volunteering for this, actually paying a lot of money to do this, but he's really quite a smart guy. But he likes to challenge himself. This photo happens to be in the top of Half Dome at Yosemite. There were about 20 of us this year that climbed that. And again, it's not a climb. It's a strenuous hike. It was a good 12-hour hike. You'll notice that I'm in the pink shirt standing there, and I didn't look like that was all that safe to stand out on the edge. So looks like it's going to fall someday, but not right away. Also, we are doing a cruise with the Vancouver British Columbia Dental Society. Mid-May, we're going to go from Rome down through that part of the Mediterranean to Greece and Turkey and back to Rome. So if you're interested in that, you can contact our website or the Vancouver Dental Society. San Diego, I'll be with Bob Lowe. He's speaking one day, and I'm speaking one day, March 5th and 6th. And March 13th with the New England Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry. And March 19th, we're doing a program with Bonadent Dental Laboratory in Seneca Falls, New York. Now, that meeting is sold out at this time, but we're doing one about a month later in Florida, and you can go to our website on blatchford.com and find out dates on that one. So just to fill you in what we're going on, so we're going to be near you. I noticed by the list of doctors, there are people from all over the country, so I will be close to you at some point in the near future. All right, so this is our Playing Your A Game, and we started these calls about 2 years ago after writing the book, Playing Your A Game, and we featured 23 offices in that book, and we've since published another book called The Blueprints, where we've featured another 20-some offices. But then we said, we went through those, we interviewed each of those offices, had them tell their story on one of these webinars, and now we're taking some of our clients who have done very well in our program, interviewing them, and tonight we have chosen Dennis and Marie Stiles from Maryland, who are here with us tonight, husband and wife team. Somewhat a rare thing in dentistry, although it's becoming more and more common as more and more women are going to dental school. Dennis and Marie have practiced in Maryland for some time and have been clients of ours for about 18 months. And I'm going to ask them at this time to fill us in, give us a somewhat of a thumbnail sketch of their history prior to meeting Blatchford, and then, of course, after in our program. Before I have them speak, though, I just want to mention a couple logistical things. If you have questions, if you can click on, you should have your ability to put your hand up, and I can call on you. Or down below is a chat box, and it says type message here. And if you type a question into that box with your name on it, I will be happy to ask the Stiles the question that you have. So tonight it's your call, so you can feel free to ask any question you want to ask. So, Dennis and Marie, why don't you give us a little thumbnail sketch, your history there in Maryland, how you started your practice, how long you practiced, perhaps what you were doing before you met us, and then talk about what you've done the last year or 18 months.
Okay, well, we're glad to be here tonight, Bill, with you, and we're looking forward to sharing some ideas or some great things that have been happening with our practice. And we started back in 1986 in a small community called Germantown, Maryland. We did start from scratch right out of dental school. We had a little support from our dads. We're both dentists. Marie's dad practiced down in Washington, D.C., and my dad was up in Massachusetts. And we decided that we'd stay a little closer to the D.C. area, and I guess it was the halfway point between Massachusetts and Washington, D.C., and the Germantown, Maryland seemed to be that great location for us. It was an up-and-coming, thriving community, and, you know, a great place to start a practice. We were very fortunate to have a little help from our parents as far as, co-signing notes. And, we were starting a family at that time, too, so we were just kind of getting started. And I was working as an associate in another practice. And we just did a lot of grassroots, getting involved in the community, marketing through involvement, I think, was probably the best way, joining the Chamber of Commerce, becoming a member of the Rotary Club. And, and then as we grew our practice, we found that we were, starting to, grow very successfully. But, we had stumbling blocks along the way. And, we wanted to improve our clinical skills, so we both did a lot of training down at the Pankey Institute in Florida, and that really helped us refine our skills and become, we feel, very strong in the clinical area. But then, we also found that, we had some struggles in the area of leadership. And I think when we finally moved our practice from Germantown, and we actually were very fortunate, we bought a building in a community very close to where we were, and, it was really time for us to move because our first practice was in a shopping center, and we were just kind of running out of space. And we found an area called the Kentlands, which is one of the new urban communities where they actually kind of build a city within a city. And it's been a great place for us. We own the building. We have a tenant upstairs, and we've just been growing very successfully over the last few years. But as we really started to kind of look at our practice and where we were, we really wanted to, start to jumpstart our practice a little bit more because we were starting to feel like we were, we were kind of just moving along, but we felt like we needed some help. And I had been working with a local executive coach, and when we were hitting the wall with our practice around a million, doing a gross, around a million, we thought, we needed a little bit more help. And we did a little research and contacted the Blatchford Solutions Group. And I think it had a lot to do with the whole concept, the whole coaching model that really attracted us to work with Bill and really begin to energize what we really needed at the time.
So Dennis or Marie, either one of you. Marie, why don't you talk for a little bit? Thank you, Dennis. Marie, what would you say the main benefits you've derived so far? I mean, your practice has grown about 20%, a little bit more than 20%, almost between 25 and 30% during the 18 months we've worked together. What would you add as other benefits besides that?
Wow, there's just a huge list.
Go for it.
Yeah, right. Dennis and I were talking about this just the other day, and I said to him that I think that what I appreciate most about working with you and everyone on your team is just the level of knowledge and experience that you and your team have provided for us. I mean, you just give us such a sense of what's a realistic expectation if we make this change, and what has worked in other practices, and what can we expect, to see good results from. And then some things, we sort of knew that we wanted to do, but just actually having the, you know, having the accountability, having to really, you know, have a time frame and be accountable to actually implementing changes. It's just been a huge, huge, huge thing for us. And it's really, you know, been an impetus for us to change a lot of things in our practice and just really grow, really step outside our comfort zones and try new things. And the results have been great.
Would I push you out of your comfort zone?
I'm sorry?
Would I actually push you out of your comfort zone?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think you did.
Now, I don't think you've mentioned this, but Dennis works 4 days, and you, or when you work 1 day, or now you're going to day and a half or 2 days. Is that the right schedule? Is it 3 and 1? I don't remember.
I'm working 3, and she's working 1 now, but we're having a lot of new patient growth, so she's coming in on Thursday mornings to see new patients.
Right.
Now, you've started quite a bit here in the last year or so on marketing. I know you've really stepped up the marketing. That was one of the weak points in the practice when we started. You were seeing less than 10 patients a month, typically. Why don't you share with us some of the things that you've added this year that have made a big difference in marketing? Either one of you can answer that question.
Well, great, yeah. I think the biggest thing is just, you know, through your pushing us along a little bit, we really took a real good look at our website and decided that we weren't doing anything really well with that website. So we hired another company to help us, and then we looked into some other options with regard to communicating. You know, the way we look at when you're looking at the internet and you're trying to communicate a vision and a message, you really want also to look at developing relationships. You know, with people. And what we've done is gotten a little bit involved with the Web 2.0 or the social media area, and we've set up a fan page and a blog, and even we do YouTube testimonials. We have we really love that too. I mean, we're having a ball with that. I mean, we pick every morning at our morning huddle. We'll say, "Is there anybody we want to ask to give us a testimonial?" And we usually, one a day, we pick out a patient. And it's not that every patient is ready to do that, but we have a lot of patients that have given us the video testimonials, and then we put them up on our website and tie some type of, this patient's going to share something about their experience with sleep apnea, or this patient shares a little story about their new veneers or whatever the case may be. But that has really sparked a lot. We're getting at least 2 new patient calls a day based on being a little bit more involved with the web.
That was a statistic that you mentioned in our seminar in Portland a few weeks ago that I was really impressed with. It's one of the reasons we asked you to be on this call. Now, you told me earlier that one of the things that you've really put in place in your practice this year is better leadership and empowering your team, because a lot of doctors are listening to this and wondering, well, how they're already fully employed. How in the world can we get this social networking going? And you shared with me that you have a hygienist who's actually taken this project on. And doing quite a bit of this. Why don't you explain that a bit?
What she's doing is she's taken a lot of responsibility in the marketing area for us. We've actually hired a company to help us a little bit with the social media piece, but we've formed little marketing teams within our. We only have 4 people in our office. We have 2 hygienists, a front desk, and an assistant. But we've kind of narrowed down certain areas in marketing that each, we formed these small teams of 2, two of us, on each team, and we're having we're breaking it down and doing different types of, whether we go to visit local businesses or we go to a sleep center and talk to the coordinator of a sleep center and give them our cards, or what the doctor's doing to get involved with the community. Who are we taking out to lunch, and who are we asking to go out to lunch, things like that. So she's not actually, day in, day out working the social media piece, though. She's actually coordinating the marketing that we're doing.
Tell me how you got your team. How were you able to empower your team to actually start doing this? Because what I see in most offices, unless we hire a specific person for marketing, the team is kind of hands-off on the marketing until it's up to the doctor to bring in more new patients. How did you make this transfer?
Well, I think a big part of it was, of course, the team taking on more personal responsibility, you know, taking in more ownership of what's happening in the office. And a lot of that happened through the implementation of the bonus system through BAM. And when they actually started to receive bonus dollars, then they got a lot more excited about actually keeping that schedule full and productive and taking a bigger role in making it all happen.
You went from a million, just slightly under a million, to about 1.3 million, and it kind of stayed right there at that area. So with four people, you did have 4.5 when we started, I believe. And so what would their typical bonus in a month be?
We've averaged anywhere from 900, anywhere from 300 to 900. You know,
okay.
It depends on the cycle. We just had our last BAM cycle. They all bonused, I think it was close to 400.
Very good.
And yeah, I mean, they love that. I think the other thing they love that I just really didn't realize until our last 4x4 meeting, was, you know, just being asked to take on more responsibility and take on more projects and not just, you know, punching in and punching out, but being more responsible within our practice. And that, mm-hmm. to me, for me, is very gratifying.
Right.
I have a couple questions here. John Workman has a question. So, John, I'm going to unmute your mic, and you can ask your question directly, if I can make this work. There you are, John. You're on the air. John Workman, you had a question? I guess not. Try another question here. Okay, well, I'm trying to find anybody has a question they might want to ask. Tony, Anthony Benassi, you can also just type your questions into the chat box. I can see them as well. But I can get you live here if you'd like. Okay, Anthony, you're on.
I'm sorry, I didn't have a question.
Oh, okay. you clicked the question box. So
I hit it by mistake.
Okay, well, I'm not the only one.
I have a question. As long as I'm on, I do have a question.
Go ahead.
In getting the team involved, how big of a transition was that? I've got two sisters that work for me, and they're great. And I have a hygienist that it's like pulling mud through a straw to get her, you know, to do anything. And I'm not... I just don't know if you went through something like that trying to motivate your staff or if it was not a problem for you.
Are the two sisters your sisters?
No.
Okay, that makes it easier.
No, definitely not.
Okay. Dennis Marie, take away. What do you say?
Well, you know, it's a process. For absolutely sure it's a process because, you know, where we began was having the team more involved with facilitating our team meetings, taking more responsibility, you know, just kind of walking before we ran. And, you know, we have a weekly one-hour meeting, and then we have a monthly four-hour meeting. We call it 4x4. You know, having the team members fully responsible for setting the agenda, gathering the information for the topics, you know, that's a beginning point. And it takes a while. You know, I had a kind of a strong personality when the practice. I was kind of doing a lot more than I really should have been, and it took a long time to really get the team to start to let go of the paradigm that I had to be the place where they had to go for a question. And now they're
team changes too, I believe.
What's that?
Didn't you have some team changes in the process?
Well, I was going to say, you know, not everybody was totally embracing all the changes we were making. And so you get to that point where, you know, this is, I think it's actually a phrase maybe that Bill likes to use. I'm not sure, but it's, you know, the bus is going in this direction and we want you on the bus with us. Either you're on the bus or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's hard to have to make those decisions, but we have had some turnover. But it's been for the best, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. Let's move forward. You're always working a 4-day work week, but I believe you're taking quite a bit more vacation time now.
We've gone from 190 to a little under 180 days a year. So we're down to probably 176 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
And your production has gone up during that time.
Right, right. And we love it.
I believe you operate somewhere around 50-55% overhead. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All right, let's talk about two things. Two specific things that you think you've put in place that have increased your efficiency and your profitability. And let's take them as a combination. So a couple of things that would help the people that are listening in here that are not Plastic clients that would help them, and also to show what you've done. So a couple of things you've done to increase the efficiency.
Well, I think the biggest thing by far is really a dedication to cross-training.
Uh-huh.
Where all the team members know each other's jobs within the confines of what their credentials to do. So obviously, you know, our front desk, if someone's not qualified to clean teeth, they're not cleaning teeth. But everything else, I mean, our hygienists know how to do the front desk. The front desk knows how to clean it. Our patient coordinator knows how to clean a room and get it ready. And even if she has to put a coat on and assist, she can do that. You know, I think... If there's anything that we always thought we wanted to be cross-trained, but until we actually started with Blatchford Solutions, we didn't, and we finally did, and it's been the greatest thing, you know, close to a slice of apple pie.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way you say that cliche?
I think so. Yeah. I think we have the message. But that's something we really promote, and it's so helpful. To get rid of this, it changes the attitude of the office from, that's not my job. And, of course, nobody says that in the dental office, but when you ask somebody at the front desk something about clinical, I don't know, you have to talk to somebody in the back. And if you ask somebody in the back, what's the fee for this? Gee, I don't know, you have to talk to somebody in the front. They might as well just say, it's not my job. And that just infuriates me when I go to most businesses when I hear that. And so cross-training is a very vital part of what we teach. Marie, what would one thing you would say other than cross-training?
Well, one thing that we implemented, and I have to say there was a lot of resistance at first from particularly our two hygienists, was having patients be able to pay for their treatment in the operatories. We implemented that. We put in swipe machines for credit cards in all the operatories, and I have to tell you, patients absolutely love it, and they just think we're really high-tech. Our hygienists are very comfortable with it now, and it's freed up our patient coordinator to spend a lot more time on those important new patient phone calls and helping the patients with other things other than just collecting payments. And, of course, it keeps our collection ratio nice and high as well. So that's been a really there was a lot of resistance there, but we just bit the bullet and said we're doing it, and it's worked out great. It's been really great.
For those of you that are listening in, one of the things that we teach is we streamline a lot of things that typically, traditionally, have been done at the front desk. And one of those things is we make appointments in the treatment rooms for hygiene and for operative. But we also collect money. And it's so easy. It eliminates accounts receivable. Most of our clients do not send statements. I just recently did a seminar in Portland, and one of my clients, Dr. Winchell from Longview, Washington, was there. He's been a client for over 20 years. And they haven't sent a statement out in 20 years, and they just collect money. And it's always fun to have his team at one of our seminars because he's also, his team has bonused every single pay period for 20 years. And it's a small team, but they collect from the hygiene patient, the recall patient right there on the spot. And I compare that to going to a nice restaurant versus a diner. In a nice restaurant, you finish your meal, they bring the check to the table, and you give them your credit card, and they come back a few moments later and say, I need your autograph, and the yellow copy is yours. Done. You go to Joe's Diner, they bring the check to the table, and you go stand in line at the cash register. And I asked the question, which would you rather be, fine dining or Joe's Diner? And it's interesting, we get a lot of resistance, primarily from the people who have to do it, have to change what they're doing. But... once they do it, I'm so glad, Marie, that you said that, because once they do it, they absolutely love it. The patients love it. They no longer have to stand out there at the front and pay, or worse, just walk out the door without without pain, then you send 2.5 statements before the balance is zero. And so you've turned that very low income appointment into a loss. So that is that's important. A couple other things. Now, you raised your production from slightly under $1 million to 1.3. What would you say were some of the things that caused you to increase the production in that short period of time? At a time, I mean, if you look at this historically, the country was going into a recession when you started this program, and during that time you grew by approximately $300,000 of gross in a year. What were some other things that created that? Because your new patient flow didn't really get going until a few months ago.
Well, I think there are two major issues here. One would be refining our communications and getting much better, you know, at communicating with our patients. We do a lot of role playing at our 4x4 meetings. We actually record, with videotape the role playing exercises, and then we look at them again as a team and lightly critique each other. We're very flexible with that. We're not hard on each other. But at the same time, that's really been a helpful aspect to this. We've also expanded our service offerings. Recently, you mentioned earlier, Marie's doing IV sedation. Well, we've incorporated the use of the Velscope. We've been doing, sleep apnea appliances. And we recently incorporated a new product into our preventative care area with something called Carry Free. So, and the patients are constantly being, we're keeping patients in the loop on what we're doing. So there's always a little bit of a buzz about the Stiles dentistry practice, So it's kind of a place to go because we're out, on the cutting edge. But we're also doing more, bigger cases. I'm really glad to be doing more. I'm not actually placing implants, but I'm restoring implants and doing, a lot of restorative dentistry, and I love that. And with the way we're setting up our IV sedation model is Marie's going to do the sedation and I'm going to be doing the dentistry.
That's a pretty good combination.
It's going to work out really well. Yeah.
Anthony, your hand is up again.
Okay. Here's my question. With scheduling, I just got a CEREC machine, and that's been, it's one of our biggest internal marketing things, I think. I've only had it for about a month and a half. But we're running into problems just with scheduling, trying to get the new patients in and still have the time allotted for the procedures that take a little bit longer. And I work alone, so it's me, and I don't have another dentist that I can fall back on. My son is in dental school, so I'm waiting for that to happen. And my daughter's talking about it. So, but I guess that my question is, with the different procedures that you're doing, how are you working your scheduling if you've got people in the operatories making the appointments and people at the front desk making appointments? How does that work?
We typically we use a block schedule method that's promoted by Dr. Blatchford as well, which helps us quantify the more major procedures that we want to do primarily in the morning so that we reach our production goals early in the day. And it organizes our schedule so that we're not doing a lot of, it's not a crazy mix. We know what we're going to do in the morning typically, and then we schedule a new patient usually either before lunchtime or in the afternoon, or even, we're scheduling a lot of we're pre-blocking our hygiene department now for new patients as well so that we have the times, because we're getting a lot more calls, so we have the times, set aside for the patients. But for specifically, the blocking is really, really a big plus for us.
So what we're doing on that is, Anthony, is we set aside certain times a day for certain procedures and stick with that. The thing I've proposed with CEREC is great technology, but you have to learn to use it efficiently. And one of the things that I see is that many of them have been assessed because people don't put the time in. It's quite a steep learning curve to become efficient with that.
It's so much fun, though.
Oh, it is fun. It's fun, but so is fly fishing.
Right.
I like flying my float plane. That's fun, too, so it's skiing. But is it okay to have fun while you're trying to make money? That's what you've got to decide. So you do make money with that. It's great technology, but you do have to put the time into it to get it down. I have several clients that use CERAC very efficiently. They put it in the block booking. And, of course, you know, when you mentioned how are we scheduling in the back and how do you schedule at the front, well, everybody's networked on the same computer system, and so we can see where the appointments are. And so it works out quite well, but you do have to set aside the time for that, and it's just like any other procedure. You just put it in the block where you want to do it. Typically, our doctors are doing their larger procedures in the morning. And,
right.
And that's okay. Very good. All right. Moving ahead here. So those are some things. The block booking is a key part of this. The bonus system is a key part of this. Now, the reason I mentioned the overhead is that even with the bonus, there's still under 20% for staff salaries at this point, which is a key point in our program, is to have your staff down under that 20% level. And in order to do that, you have to have very efficient systems in place. One of the things that I was pleased with the Stiles practice is while they had some turnover last year, it really didn't affect their production as much as it could have when some people move. And so, you see, the stronger the systems are, we can change people, and business goes on. So that's an important point that I'd like to make here. So,
okay, I do have a question with the bonuses.
Go ahead.
It sounds like if you get everybody on board, it wouldn't be that much of a problem, but is that bonus split, everybody gets the same bonus, or are you splitting it, you know, you have this job, so you get this bonus, and you have this job, and you get this bonus. Do you have people
typically get
hurt feelings? Or
everybody does it slightly different. Salaries are generally different based on the position in the office, but the bonuses,
right,
in probably 99.9% of my offices, divide the bonus equally based on the amount of time that you work. You're full-time, you
okay,
get a full share. Half-time, you get a half share.
That's how we do it.
That's what we do.
Okay. Thanks.
So in other words, the hygienist who makes approximately twice as much as the dental assistant gets the same bonus.
Okay.
Even though her salary is different, but her bonus share is the same. And in some of our offices that have been with me for a few years, the difference between income and level compensation really start to balance out because they're not a huge disparity anymore because they're getting 50% of their income through the bonus system.
Okay.
Because you have to... You have to have some incentive program for people to willing to do, as Dennis and Marie were saying, role-playing, videotaping, that sort of thing. And by the way, those are role-playing and videotaping of us in role-play situations, not videotaping of patients. Very good. Good question. Kelly Stanton, do you have a question? I have your mic turned off, so it's turned on now if you're interested. Okay. All right, so Dennis and Marie, tell them a little bit about coaching, why coaching works. You made the comment early, Dennis, you had an executive coach, so you understand coaching. How would you define coaching? Because that's what we do.
Well, I think, the way I would define coaching is you're realizing our vision, our dreams. You're helping us to organize ourselves, so, and then... In really unleashing our potential, I think, in many regards. I mean, we certainly, and then the other piece that's very important is the accountability piece, because we, you know, as a good coach is going to hold you accountable. So when we sat down with you and Carolyn at our summit, when we first started back in February of 2008, we outlined a lot of ideas and shared some of our dreams as far as how we wanted to see our practice go, and from there it was just a matter of helping us to just giving us a little bit of a push, and we started looking at things that we never would have really looked at. I mean, IV sedation was way off our radar screen. Treating patients for sleep apnea, we hardly ever heard about that. I mean, it was really, a lot of, and you, of course, bringing your expertise to the table was huge.
And I'd like to add one thing to that as far as the coaching experience. There were times in the beginning when it was a little frustrating for us that we weren't just being told the answer to our questions.
And, well, the answer is different for everybody.
Right, right. And we were encouraged to have to figure it out on our own, and that's a little bit about leadership, I think. And so we really grew in that aspect, and that is what I think a good coach helps someone.
Well, that's one of the things that Dennis said earlier, is that you become much better leaders and more comfortable with your team.
Yeah.
Christine Skirdalis, you have your hand up, and your mic is live. Christine is just playing with us, I guess. She puts her hand up but doesn't have a question. If you want to speak, I'll signal for all the hands down. So if you have a question for our speakers tonight, just put your hand up. Click on the little box where your hand is, and that means you have a question. I'll unmute your mic and you go. Okay. So you've become better leaders. You're producing more dentistry. You're having, I know you're having more fun. You've added some things to practice, which I think that's very valuable because it keeps you in the game. Dentists get into a game of doing the same thing over and over again, and it gets tedious. And so by adding some new things, it kind of opens some new dimensions, creates some excitement. So a question comes up quite a bit. What is the cost of this program? Dennis, how would you answer that question?
Well, the program costs a little over around $47,000, but it's worth every penny we paid. I'd say we've turned that over 10 times over, and it's been the greatest investment we've made in our practice as we start looking into the second half of our career, so to speak. That's the way we look at it. It's been the best investment we've made in our practice.
So the return was pretty good on it financially.
Huge return on the investment.
Yeah, and that's kind of hard to find these days. I did some math on this one time, and I figured out that the cost of the, and by the way, one of the things we teach all of you listening is to get comfortable talking about money with your patients. And so when I asked Dennis what's the cost of the program, he has no trouble just telling us what it costs, $47,500. And that's one thing that we work with the doctors on. I was working with the doctor yesterday, 2 days ago on the phone. I didn't do much yesterday. I've had this terrible cold and bronchitis, so I've been off the phone, although you can't catch this from me on the phone, beauty of technology. If you were face-to-face, you'd all have a sore throat by tomorrow morning. But and he wanted me to talk to his receptionist, a nice young lady, and just in role-playing with her, how to encourage a patient calling with a broken tooth to pull a chart or pull it up on the computer and look at it and say, wow, you've got three teeth on the same side. Would you like to do all three at the same time? So I was role-playing her. I said, with her, and I said, how much would that be? And she had a real hard time saying the amount of money. So I said, that's your homework assignment for this next week, is to actually practice on saying that amount of money to people. But I did some calculations on the $47,500, and it's about the same monthly expense for the next 2 years as hiring a single $17 an hour dental assistant. And one of the things I find real interesting, dentists have no qualms at all about hiring that second dental assistant. Just no problem. Don't even consult with anybody when it comes to hiring a consultant for that much. It becomes a big deal. Dennis and Marie, a couple other things that you could like to add to this. You had looked at several programs, and I don't want you to name names of what you looked at, but in particular, what were you looking for when you hired us?
Let's see. So we were looking, you mean what, let's see. So why you
looking,
the question?
Specifically, what were you looking for when you hired Blanche?
We were looking for someone who was going to listen to what we wanted. That was very, very important to us. We didn't just want a program where everyone was supposed to go through the program and do the same things and expect the same results. We were looking for someone who was going to listen to what we specifically wanted, what we thought we wanted to improve in our practice. You know, someone who wanted to know what our needs were, basically, and someone who's going to help us individually address those needs. And that was absolutely what happened with Blatchford. And we were looking for go ahead, Dennis, you were saying.
Well, just, you know, in studying the different groups that we were, looking at when we were, you know, I'm the analytical. You know, I'm always, you know, doing the research and getting into the details. But just, you know, common values in dentistry, communicate, high leadership, communication, you know, relationships, you know, one of your big emphasis is establishing, you know, a very successful level of rapport with your patients, you know, and just all the things, you know, there were so many common values that we, that struck us when we, you know, began to learn more about what you did. And then that was, it was a slam dunk for us because it's just so easy for us to connect with all the things that you bring to the table are what we want.
Okay. Deborah Miller, you have your hand up for a question.
I wanted to know how much vacation time they've been able to have.
Well, let's see. We six plus weeks a year. We do a 2-week vacation in the summer, week Christmas, a week of spring break, 10 days in Spain. I mean, yeah, how many weeks would you say?
We're getting pretty close to 7 weeks a year, and then we work 4 days a week, so we've got long weekends every weekend.
Yeah, I think you said you're down below 170 days, somewhere in that vicinity.
Right.
Very good.
174 days.
Be fun to watch you, and I know those are 8-hour days, they're not 10 or 12-hour days, so.
Right.
Very good. Well, that's part of our key, and one of our goals is to help people not just make their practice work well, but how do you design a life and design your life first and then design a practice to support that life rather than the other way around. I find so many professionals, we tend to design our business, our career, and life takes what's left over. And that's been the opposite for me for years. I think my wife was probably instrumental in that, although I grew up on a dairy farm, as some of you know, and I knew I didn't want that. That's 24/7. 365 days a year, and I didn't want that, but I think Carolyn's been very good at designing our vacations first and work around it, and that's what we teach our clients as well, is to design your life first. So I guess the question is, you did this program starting in 08, right in the middle of this recession we're having. You've grown, been successful at it, and I'm pleased, and we'd like to encourage other people to take a serious look at this coaching program. I know a question we hear often is asking your spouse or your accountant or your team members about doing this. And after hearing what Dennis and Marie have said, we have the spouse on the phone. That's Marie or Dennis, whichever way you look at it. And their accountant is certainly on board. He sees a huge return on the investment. And the question about asking the team, I make it fairly clear that I'm working for doctors, I work for owners, and I work for those team members that want the same thing that you want. And I think it was Anthony who said that trying to get his hygienist on board is like trying to suck mud through a straw. Well, I can't visualize that too much, but I can think of a very, very thick milkshake through a straw. And, you know, you have to decide whose practice is it. And when we take on a new client, one of the things that we do is we help you evaluate individual team members and help you make those choices, because when it's all said and done, it's your office, it's your practice, and you've got to make those decisions on your own. And of course, one of the things that I always question when people want to talk to their spouse or their accountant or their team, and they want to increase their income or they want more time off, and my question is how long have they known about this, that you want to accomplish that? And if they knew that, why haven't that helped you up until this point? What we do is completely different than what accountants do. They work your finances to figure out how much tax you owe. And what we do is we coach the business side of it. So my last question is, will 2010 be a banner year for you? And I want to point out that many of our clients are having had a great 2009. Many of our clients had the biggest year in history. And I'm quite proud of that, given the fact that the whole dental profession was somewhat flat last year, and yet the clients had their most profitable year. So I'm pleased with that. So Dennis and Marie, I want to thank you very much for being in this call tonight. And we do have a little bit of time left. Any questions, what you'll have to do is click on that box, raise your hand, and I will call on you, and Dennis and Marie can answer those questions. But the question I have for all of you is, what is next? Is 2010 going to be a repeat of 2009, or are you going to make it a banner year? If you choose to make it a banner year, I would love to be part of that process with you. And we have some specialists that will be calling on you if you're interested in this program. Answer their call. If you're not interested, also answer their call and tell them you're not interested. We do these once a month, and hopefully they're useful to you. We do other calls as well, and I did want to share with you those places I'll be speaking in the next couple months if you want to hear me in person. And hopefully when you hear me in person, so I won't have the same voice that I hear now. So unless somebody puts their hand up in the next 30 seconds, I'm going to thank Dennis and Marie for being on this call tonight, and thank all of you for taking some time out of your evening to be with us also.
Glad to join you, Bill.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Okay, Anthony, you've got your hand up again, so I'm going to call on you. Go ahead.
It's always me. I just two real quick questions. One, in how long does it take? How long do you take to implement the changes? And then the other is, I guess, how much time do you spend with the consultant to get to the point where you can make the changes?
Well, the way the program works, Anthony, is once you decide to do it, you fill out a questionnaire on your practice. You spend the best part of a day with my wife and I, if you're married, with your spouse, not by yourself. And what we do is, by asking questions, find out where you're headed, what you're trying to accomplish, what's your long-term goals, and then we assess where you are now and what we have to do to get from point A to B. Most of our clients see changes in the first 90 days.
Okay.
But then we do as much time as necessary, but the answer is how much time does it take.
Okay.
But the program is 14 months long, but I don't work in December and August much, so you get about 14 months in the program. Okay. Anything else? Well, thank you, everybody, for being on the call tonight, and I wish you all a happy evening.